It's Wednesday, August 8th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 272 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
My name's Chad.
I'm still Wayne.
My name's Julia.
This is John.
This is what, take 14?
Probably at least. Yeah, we've had all kinds of issues ranging from technical to
social
behind the times. So we'll see what happens this time. Yes. If you're hearing this,
what do you mean behind the times? We're talking about tabletop role playing here.
Yeah,
what,
we're totally not talking about innies voting and telling people to vote for RPPR for an innies, which ended two days ago. And we're not going to drop this for another week. And sorry, Ross, I really am. I know I said I'd plug it for you, but
you know, it's sorry, one of those things. Chad never brings news or announcements to the table. And he comes all excited, ready to go. I have announcement. I have news.
We even recorded it.
Yeah, we're going to promote something, and we're going to tell funny stories while we promote it. And voting ended.
And then John's like, wait a minute, hasn't voting already ended? Like, I don't know. Let's check.
Once again, we have embarked upon an any-related endeavor and utterly failed.
We even told people to cheat, too. I told them how to cheat. It was hilarious.
But now there's a Lost Wayne's Awkward Confession that no one will ever hear.
There was.
And you
the
deleted
financial
it.
One. Yep.
Oh,
yeah. And all and the whole
no, no, no.
Band
no, let's hear it. Now, so no, Wayne, you're no, incapable of counting.
It is lost to history. Let's talk about the finale of our story arc for Dresden.
So this weekend, we actually did conclude a storyline in our Dresden Files campaign.
I'm sold on this idea of gaming with storylines at this point. I like story arcs.
Well, with story arcs, not a storyline. I also enjoy having a storyline with my role-playing games.
There's only two kinds of story. Hack and slash.
That's right.
See, this is what happens when we try to retell the same thing that we recorded once.
Essential beats of storytelling in RPG are killing monsters and taking their
and they say lightning never strikes twice. I mean, come on.
So, Wayne,
I am sold on the idea of story arcs in games. Basically, that you break your game up, you play through a story arc or an adventure or whatever you want to call it. You stop, you take a break, you play some other things. So you're not playing the exact same game for a year in a row. Because I like variety. I like trying new things. And then you come back or you don't come back. Either way, you've reached a finale. Because I've ranted before. I am sick and tired of starting campaigns, getting hooked on it. And never reaching an end, never
you,
knowing
which
how
is
it ends.
And everyone else
like
that plays role-playing games.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you play in arcs, at least if you don't come back to it, you reach some sort of ending. You got some satisfaction out of it instead of being left high and dry like a long campaign.
This is actually the way I started role-playing is we use this concept. We just didn't call it story arcs. We would have a campaign that we played for years, but it was comprised of sort of individual adventures, but those adventures would take several sessions, you know, 5 to 10 sessions to play through. So it was a major plot line that you would do, but it would come to a conclusion. From then we could go on to another one. So we may not necessarily take a break in between, but it did break up the big thing of what was going on. And I think it's very helpful to do that. I just now realize in talking about this, what we've done lately, I have done that. I just didn't call it a story arc.
We had a naturally policing system of there's a moment of boredom and someone suggests a new game and or setting and everyone immediately jumps ship because it's the new shiny.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Ironically, this also facilitated never finishing anything, which is exactly what we're all bitching about.
Our gaming group always does story arcs, unless it's a module. I think that's the only time we've ever not done that.
A module's just like an itty-bitty story arc.
Yeah, because we would
only
take
terrible
breaks in between books.
Shut up. I love Earthshaker.
I do love Earthshaker.
Who doesn't?
We also are very episodic about ours, and the fact that there's like an opening thing where they describe, like, I swear that we could have theme music for each one of our games, and that's how it is. It's almost like a TV show where you reach the end of the season and now it's a new season.
This last game has a lot of music to it.
It did. Yeah, Chad, you need to make a soundtrack.
Yes,
you said when we were done with this arc, you would make the soundtrack.
Yep. My character is a musical character. I mean, he's kind of like a Bursker, but, you know, he mechanically, by the dice, very talented. He plays guitar. And I am not musical in any way, shape, or form. And so what I would do is I would just pull up on my phone, like, when there was a break in the action or the spotlight was off me.
Like any time Pat tried to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
It was, well, our games were very social.
Both of them?
Aww.
Aww. We love you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Our games were very social. A lot of our games took place in restaurants and bars. In fact, we even had a joke that we ended all of our games at a restaurant.
We ended them in-game, not somewhere. In-game, they were played in restaurants and
every
bars.
Every game session, except for the finale, ended with everyone gathered around a dinner table. The finale ended at a breakfast table.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. That's how you know it was a finale, because it was breakfast instead of dinner.
I missed that in the moment.
Yeah, I totally missed it too in the moment. But anyway, because they were social games, my character always carried around a guitar, an acoustic guitar. And he was always twiddling on it and playing it. But he would actually break out into songs, and I would whip out my phone, and I would find YouTube videos and stuff of guitar playing. Like, either an acoustic guitar cover of a popular song, we did that a lot, or I would do, like, some classical guitar, or I would do, my favorite one was Antonio Banderas' Desperado theme, where he opens up and they're playing the mariachi guitar music. And so I would always be playing those and such. And especially when I did popular songs, usually John, Beth, and I would start singing along to them. Usually while Wayne and Pat were trying to do some serious role-playing, and we were role-playing drunkenly singing these songs. There were also, like,
that always
songs.
Happened. They were like Shaggy and Scooby, and we were like Fred, Velma, and Daphne. There was the same breakdown of 3 and 2. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of funny that I noticed this, particularly in this last session, that this gang, the Scooby Shaggy gang, went off and did their drunken potheadness.
And it was the Scooby Shaggy gang, and it was the YouTube, that actually did the plot.
Basically sort of solved the end of this of the campaign.
I think that's how every game is, though. You always have the couple people that want to go off. And it all depends on your character, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've played characters where she didn't give a crap about what was going on.
The thing was that made it difficult with this game is that this was happening at the same time. There was role-playing going across the table one way.
Yeah.
And
that
then
happens.
Role-playing going across the table the other
way. We were not broken into groups.
Yeah, and
we
this
were
was,
on top of each other.
And this was in character, too. It wasn't like talking about the Olympics or whatever, what we saw on TV last night. I mean, this was in character singing, in character talking, in character pretending to eat, pretending to get drunk, while there was like...
Sometimes supplemented.
Yeah, so there was like deep role-playing. And at first I was thinking, you know, maybe Wayne, for the next story arc, you should divide the table, like
the seating
arrangement, so that we don't role-play over each other. I think that's a good thing that we do, because when we start doing it, and when I say we, I'm making these hand motions that everyone could see, of course, but when I say we, I mean like me, John, and Beth would start doing this outrageous social role-playing and singing, we would be talking over, because Wayne and Pat sat across from each other, it made a sort of a cross role play, and we would talk over each other, but it was a good thing, because we would realize after a while, oh, hey, we're kind of interrupting their role play, maybe we should get back into the story, and then they would realize...
I would never willfully do that. I only agreed because you wanted to.
They would realize sometime, it's just like, okay, yeah, we've been doing this deep, heavy stuff, these guys are over here singing, let's go see what they're doing, and kind of loosen it up a little bit, And it was like self-regulating.
Yeah, at times it felt like there were two separate games going on. As a GM, I'm trying to keep up with both. See what's going on here, what's going on there. But it really was like there were two separate games going on when the group would get split like that.
If you want to keep up what's going on in the B team, which is the singing, drinking, party team.
That covers it. Singing, drinking, party.
Yep.
That's it.
You should check Facebook. Because we would be updating Facebook of, oh, haha, Beth's singing this song. And then I'd post a YouTube video and John would come in and go, ah, I'm a vampire. Blah.
Blah. three shots of Jameson.
And then we would like, in character posting on Facebook, but one step away. We were role-playing, friends, partying out on this town that we made, and then posting to Facebook about it. I mean, the only thing we weren't doing was taking pictures of our food. It's just one step
away
from
hipster. We were dangerously close to LARPing.
I found this really interesting because this is actually the first time that I've ever encountered this in all my years of role-playing.
People having fun.
No. This concept of multiple sets of people role-playing at the same time. And I think usually in a more, I don't know if you want to call it a standard or a traditional setting, that doesn't happen for the reason that you just mentioned, Wayne, is that the GM needs to, you know, be focused and give their concentration to what's happening at the table.
I think,
and
when you have multiple groups,
yeah. Well, they won't. And I think it's, I think it's two things. I think it's the groups as well. Yeah. I think that there's that it's sort of like a conversation. Whenever you're listening to a conversation, or at least for me, I know this is the way I am. When people are talking and they're having a conversation, you don't interrupt them. You let them do their thing and then you interject. That's kind of a natural way that a lot of groups, they fall into that kind of a pattern.
Well, and this grew out of what was happening in the Battletech game before that, because this kind of thing started happening near the end of that Battletech game, where you'd have a couple of players that were off to the side and were starting to do this back and forth. It just went to the extreme.
Getting pregnant.
Afterwards.
Mind gaming group, that's just all we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's never a dull moment in ours. If there's like a very one-sided story happening, there's usually other role-playing happening in the background somewhere. Like, I know that we played a really... that was one of my large groups that I talked about in the past. We were off drinking with a gnoll while the rest of the party was off doing something else. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty normal for our group.
And I come from a tradition, too, where there's a lot of in-character sidebars. When I used to role play with Dan back in the day, where all we did was play Battletech, which is not what we always played, but there was Shadowrun, too, unfortunately. But the...
Don't knock it.
Yeah, and Skies of Glass LARPing.
Oh, my God, that was so good. That was good role playing there. We would always do sidebars. Because we would always game in big open areas, right? We would kind of game in really comfortable chairs, and there was a lot of room and that sort of thing. And in the past, I would say 5-6 years, gaming groups come and go and loyalties shift and things change and all this sort of stuff. Well, this sort of new gaming group that I kind of made slash became a part of, the tradition was different. It was what you're talking about, Pat, because you and the people you gamed with somewhat were part of that, and it was... sitting around a table and very story focused, and the game master and sidebars might have been looked at as a distraction. Not that there's anything bad or wrong with that, but it's just sort of a different tradition. And I kind of altered my play habits to be more in line with that. Now I'm gaming more with John because you're out of law school.
Yay!
And some of the people that we did game with who are part of that tradition are not in the game anymore. And then Dan is back in the game, and then, you know, and Wayne is, you're not part of any tradition. You're making your own traditions.
That's right. I'm up for anything.
Yeah. You're easy. I hear that. Yeah.
And just like your mom.
Exactly. Exactly. But her rates are better than yours.
Oh.
But
that's true. People pay more for me than they do for his mom.
That's very true.
You're good at computer crap.
That's not all he's good at.
Oh, I know. He's a good GM, too.
That's not all he's good at. But anyway, the sort of evolution now of where we're at is one where sidebars are kind of, at least for me, kind of coming back. And I think that we have to be careful because sidebars can get way too distracting. You know, I mean, it is a lot of people talking over each other. As a game master, you might miss things. As a player, you might miss things that are going on. But I think if there's a good balance going on where the sidebars remind the story focused aspect of the table that, hey, there is other fun. And the story focused aspect of the table reminds the sidebars that, hey, there is more than just singing and YouTube songs and pretending to smoke and pretending to drink and pretending to eat.
I think it also makes a difference what type of game you're playing, too. If you're playing a intrigue intensive game where everyone is trying to figure out what's the plan within the plan within the plan, at any moment we can be shot in the back, something distracting like this would probably kill the mood of something like that. If you were playing a horror game and trying to get everyone freaked out, something like this would completely kill the mood.
And if you're going room to room, monster to monster, loot box to loot box, there's really no point in going off and drinking.
Everyone's just doing that anyway.
But if there's a GM and four PCs, and the PCs are all spread around St. Louis in any combination of whoever and wherever at any given time, and there really are no bugbears or treasure boxes full of gold pieces, go ahead. Go down to BB's and get drunk.
Well, and Dresden's really good at doing that, too, because do you guys roll for anything that you do, or do you just do it?
We roll when there's, like, stats involved.
We would almost roll everything just because the fudge dice are so much fun.
Yeah.
In that aspect that, like, you could be like, I'm going to try to play guitar, and then you roll crappy. It makes it a lot more fun.
We
did that too.
I say we have had Chad roll for guitar because he's chosen to do it a lot of times.
Yeah.
He wants to see how that roll goes. We have John roll when he's trying to eat Beth's dog to see if he kills it or not.
Yeah.
I didn't try to eat her dog. I tried not to eat her dog and rolled 3 minuses and a blank. So that's how that happened.
That happens.
We actually don't make people do a lot of roles. I do like having roles for skills and things, but the way this group is, the way when as the story's rolling, it tends to kind of get in the way a little bit with the system. If we were playing like a D&D or a Pathfinder or something, there'd be a lot more roles than there are for this. But
oh, yeah.
Well, and I guess in our group, it wouldn't even be the GM telling us. We would just roll and be like, okay, I did this thing on the sidebar side of it, you know, mm-hmm. like whenever you're joking around or whatever
right.
with your party. But I think the Dresden is easier to do that in mm-hmm. than some other games. It's not like you have to add 15 things to get to what you
right,
did.
Right.
It's a, oh, it's like, I, yeah.
Pow,
I
did good. 1, 2, 3, did, yeah. boom. Okay, keep rolling.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of the sidebar stuff we did too, we would self-roll. I try and do this, boom. Roll it. Don't need GM intervention because, you know, we're all adults here.
Hey, Wayne, I found a Vorpal sword. Look at all these pluses. We're cool, right? Yeah, we're cool. All right.
Cool.
That's actually one of the points that I was making, John, that you sort of jokingly brushed onto there is, you know, what we're talking about is sort of the sidebar thing. And I think that that is what this is great for, you know, having the side conversations, the cross table RP. It's great for things that are more sidebar and or fluff, as you might call them. I think where you run into the problem and the issue that I think I would have as a GM is if you've got two or more different factions of RP going on where they're trying to do main large things like that is sort of like is canon to the story.
Yeah, if their they're trying actions to, are going to make any difference.
Yes, it makes a big impact on the story because that's where you need the GM because the GM is sort of the referee of what is happening and has to sort of be involved in that to make the calls and to well, lend credence to things or whatever.
Take it from a different perspective. If you want what you're doing to influence the overall plot or to come back up again later, the GM has to know that it happened.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how I take it because I am not quite as far down the Chad line of the players have all the power. I'm not as far down that line, but for me, I know I would want in that case for what I'm doing to make a difference in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I know as a GM, I want to listen to that. And I want to know if there's a way I can bring that up later in later games or things like that. That's why the GM really has to be able to at least hear it. Otherwise, it's never going to play a part.
And that's why I made it kind of as a joke, but I did have a point. And the point was you have to keep the GM in the loop if you want to material effect the setting or the characters.
Yeah.
But when we're all sitting around singing Under the Bridge, who cares? We all forgot about it the next day.
Yeah. You know, it's balanced to all things. I don't want to make it sound like we had two separate games running all the time.
No, we didn't.
You know, I used your drinking to introduce plot points so many times throughout the game.
Yeah.
Any kind of crazy curveball you guys throw me, I see as an opportunity. I will somehow work in a plot point in with that. Oh, you're at a bar drinking. There's a ghost over in the corner drinking.
Well, and a lot of the sidebar stuff that we were doing really helped flesh out and develop a lot of the characters. For instance, my character and Beth's character, two totally opposite kinds of people, and we developed a love-hate relationship. She saw me as sort of this stray who's in a bad situation, and she wants to help me and protect me.
You saw her as the person that chopped off your arm.
It grew back.
It did grow back. My character, he has a very false front. He's making fun of you means he loves you. If he's not making fun of you, there's a problem. But he doesn't make fun of John's character, because they have a different sort of relationship. It's on a different kind of level. And so he doesn't make fun of Joe. At all. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but that was a very conscious decision.
Yeah, you and I tended to have the only, like, really 100% serious relationship at the table. We were friendly, but our dynamic was not like my dynamic with Beth or your dynamic with Beth or your dynamic with Pat.
Mm-hmm. Everyone else just had to acknowledge that Chad was playing a troll.
Yeah.
In every aspect of a troll. He was an internet troll.
Yes. He was trolling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would troll the other characters. I would use this sort of acerbic wit and really make fun of the characters. It was my character, his name was Ward. It was Ward expressing love and respect for the other characters. And Beth, her character didn't 100% understand that, but she loved my character as a friend because I was a stray. And part of her aspects mechanically with the fate system was that I forget exactly how she tags it, but she takes in all the strays and she really cares about them. But Ward made it very hard for her to love him.
Yeah, her aspect was rounding up the lost sheep.
Rounding up the lost sheep, that's it. And she played that very well. And Ward really plays off this false exterior of he does not care. In the end, in the finale, he almost sacrificed his life. He definitely sacrificed his safety and a little bit of his sanity to show that he cared and to help Beth, saw her in trouble, rode in not to save her because she didn't need saving, but to help her achieve this victory that she was trying to achieve, because deep down inside, he really does care. I don't remember what the point of this was. Did we just evolve into a gaming story?
It doesn't matter. You've been rolling with it. People love it. It's a
gaming
story.
I was in wrath,
yes.
Having forgotten how it started.
Yeah.
Like a good tabletop role-playing game.
People at home are sitting there going, just a little bit slower, Chad. Just slower and sultry voice.
Yeah, I don't think people like my bedroom voice.
No.
I don't know. Who knows?
I do. But the thread about that episode was like, why is Chad trying to seduce all the other hosts?
Yeah.
It wasn't my bedroom voice. I don't have a bedroom voice. That
was
my...
Well, it only worked on Pat anyway, so
well,
it's
yeah,
fine.
That's true. He was all Twitter.
It doesn't take much to seduce Pat.
No, not at all.
I was on that episode, which I do not remember hardly anything of, because I was wasted drunk. I think I was trying to just, it's more like, this is my serious voice. It's like, okay, I'm talking about this, talking about this, I'm talking about this, doing these examples. Okay, now we're gaming.
But it came off as, hey, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was last else. Call, and you look kind of lonely. And I'll bang anything. So let's go. Yeah.
Pat, control
Sorry.
Your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beyond that now. So in our Dresden Files universe that we have created for our game, which is, again, we base it on St. Louis because, well, we live there.
Yeah.
You know, and
we call it Dark St. Louis because we're so original.
I really do. I love the creative process of building the world in Dresden. Over the last couple sessions before our finale session on this last weekend, basically we were a man short. And usually if we're just down one, we'll probably continue. But if we're down a couple, we'll not. We were in that situation. So it was like, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah, and it was
want to play.
We were all a little bit stressed out too, and it's like, you know, the Dresden game, we're about to hit some major tense plot point. I want something light. I want a chaser game.
Mm-hmm. And Chad had been wanting to try Inspectors for a while. He'd talked about us, and he talked about the concept of this game with the group, and I myself was interested. Actually, I think most of us were really interested to try it. Chad's like, I can run Inspectors. I'm like, sounds good.
Anyone can run Inspectors.
And we started talking about it, and the experiment that we sort of did that I think was a smashing success and interesting was that we played Inspectors in our Dresden Files Dark St. Louis. We used the same world.
Because what Inspectors is, it's one of those hippy-dippy story stick, player control everything sort of story stick role-playing games. And it's about paranormal investigators. You play a company, basically like, it's like Ghostbusters without the proton packs. You're paranormal.
Unless
you want proton packs. Unless the players want proton packs and they say, I have a proton pack. But, I mean, basically it's you play paranormal investigators in a modern setting, and it just really fits in with Dresden, I think, and then how we kind of envision St. Louis. And I kind of got the idea. I said, it's like, well, we can play this, or we can play that, or we can play this, or we can play Inspectors, and we can play it anywhere you want, and blah, blah, blah. Or, because we really like our St. Louis, then we could play Inspectors that take place in St. Louis. And in fact, there's even this thing that we made where there is a sort of Ghost Hunters reality TV show that is running around our Dark St. Louis trying to uncover things. They're not in the know. They don't know anything. They're just a fake reality TV show. But they're paranormal investigators running around trying to uncover stuff. And that's in our Dresden game. And I'm like, we can kind of have that aspect and put Inspectors in there. And you guys are like just starting out and you're trying to get on that show. And you're not necessarily in the know, and you don't know of all this other stuff. And everyone was really game for it. Everybody really wanted to do it, except John, who wasn't there. There were a couple things I didn't want to do, though. I didn't want to have cameos by our characters, because that struck me as very cheesy. And I didn't want to do a deep dive into the heavy plot stuff that Wayne was laying out. I didn't mind brushing up against it a little bit, but it didn't really come up. But I definitely wanted the feel of what was going on there. The thing about Inspectors, though, is that the game master doesn't actually run the game. Like I said before, this is one of those hippy-dippy story stick games. So you get
communist.
It is. So you get these stats, right? You have the players make characters. You have these stats. When they have to roll something, they roll on a chart. And basically, if they roll high, they get to describe what happens. So like, okay, well, I'm trying to jump this car over a bridge that's, you know, one of those drawbridges before I can't jump it and before the bad guys get me. It's like, okay, roll your technology or something like that. And you roll this basic stat. You know, I won't get into the mechanics of it, but basically if you roll high enough on this chart, the player describes what happens. And it's like, oh, I made it. And the player will look at you and go, oh, what happened? As the game master, you go, well, it looks like you did really good at that. You tell me what happened.
I know that was difficult for you, Pat, because I actually saw the look on your face the first time Chad did that to you. And you're like, I want to know what the story is. I just rolled well. Tell me what it is.
Well, it is. Inspectors is the absolute perfect example of the Chad game. I mean, if you've never met Chad,
make this setting
never,
for me.
If you've never run the listened combat to this rules, podcast,
I don't
know them.
I don't want to do anything. I'll just sit here. Yeah,
if you've never listened to the
Drive
podcast
me to
and
the
know
game.
Exactly how Chad likes to run a game,
I tend to
pick up Inspectors, play it, and then you will have played a Chad game.
Yeah.
But and that's not knocking it. It's great, but it is completely. It's a different way of storytelling because it is truly the collaborative storytelling kind of a game.
And Pat, you tend to play traditional role-playing games.
I do.
And I don't think that you had ever played one of the new hippie
Not really.
Oh, well, and anyway, also, if you roll low, the game master describes a bad thing that happens to you. Or
you can choose to describe it yourself as the player. Yeah.
Or you could also say, well, the GM describes something bad that happens to you, like you fail to make the bridge jump, but you can put a not quite as bad or humorous spin on it. It's just like,
right.
Okay, yeah, you fail to make the jump and the car goes over the edge and you're heading toward the river and then you pick it up. It's like, but thankfully, or maybe unfortunately, there was a garbage scow passing by and I land in 10 feet of muck and I'm sailing.
Now you're covered in duty, ha ha ha, but you don't have a broken spine.
Yeah.
Well, one other cool thing Chad was doing about this, the game has the mechanic of confessionals, kind of like a reality TV show where they cut to the person sitting there that's giving their, well, we were jumping the bridge and you can do that and kind of re-narrate what happened in that situation. The cool thing Chad did was he pulled out his phone and he recorded our confessionals to post up on YouTube.
Yeah.
You had an in-character Wayne's awkward confession.
Yeah, I got two Beth confessionals and I got one Wayne confessional, and we'll link them in the show notes. But yeah, I mean, it's really cool.
It's also that mechanic of it, too, is also that's even more out there for me because the confessionals.
He never did a confessional.
I didn't do a confessional. Hey, look, you're lucky that you got me to actually be able to participate in the making up the story myself instead of
by the middle of the game. You were
I was rolling with it.
You
I was
were
fine. Go, with
you
it,
were
but,
great.
But it is different because I like you said, I'm used to the more traditional GM player relationship of when I make a roll. And I do something and I'm, you know, like I'm researching this or looking for that or whatever. I then am looking to the GM to basically dole out a little bit of the story to me. It's like, okay, I succeeded. Now my prize, so to speak, is you dole out a little bit of the story. And that is not what this does.
No.
When you succeed, you make that shit up yourself. And that is different. And then the confessionals go even a step further because the way it works is, at least the way we did it, and I don't know if it's defined that way in the setting, but the way we did it is, say we were in combat, and then you can literally just all of a sudden say, okay, time for confessional. It's like on Big Brother. You know, they have the taped confessional booth. It pulls you outside of the action after the action. It's an after-action confessional, so that during which you basically say what happened at this point in the story, and you dictate what happened, and you know, you change things or not really change things, but you say this is how it happened.
That werewolf,
after it happened,
that
and
werewolf
then,
jumped on you and ripped your heart out. Time confessional. Well, it's a good thing I loaded that shotgun with silver buckshot.
So
bam,
kind of,
I blew that sucker's head off.
You complete combat. As an effort, and I mean, that's just, again,
that
it kind of, it can blow your mind if you're not used to that kind of thing, but it was very fun.
Yeah, and what we're getting at with bringing this topic up is that
Inspectors is a great game.
Well, besides that, it gave us a chance to explore a part of our setting that our regular game wouldn't have got to. In the regular game, everyone was playing a character that was fairly high on the power level. They were all in the know. They traveled in certain circles. But everyone loved the city so much that there's other areas of the city that we would have never touched on. A high school here, a house there. And this kind of gave us a chance to explore it.
I think there are at least a couple of good reasons that I myself can think of as to why you would want to do this. Why would you want to try to play another game within your world setting that you've got set up for something else? I think that's a good one. I think also it's good because it allows you to sort of take a break from your main game, which may be a real heavy, dense, dark kind of a topic. You can play this other setting where things are not so heavy and dark. You know, it's more light. And people might say, well, that's the way the world is. It is a dark and dreary setting. And I say,
tough. This is my entertainment.
Well, and yeah. I also say this. I don't care where you are, but look at real life. Look at the real world. There are a lot of things that are heavy, deep, and dark, but there's also a lot of lightness in it, too. So you can examine those other aspects. You can all kind of aspects, and it breaks things up. And like you said, Wayne, another thing is to be able to look at the aspects that you would never come across in your main campaign. So I think it's a good idea. And then furthermore, like what we've done, and you don't necessarily have to do it this way, but we use like an entirely different rules to explore this version of it. Now, I don't think you necessarily have to do that. I think we could have even done it with the Dresden Files. We could have just made new Dresden Files characters, but I think, it changes it up too.
Yeah. I think my preference is if you're going to do something like this, you get it, I don't want to say as far away from the main game as possible, but if you're doing it for a reason. And I think a lot of that reason can come from other systems. Maybe another system just fits better what you're trying to do. Let's say you're doing a space game. You're landing on a planet for a mission and you're undercover and this is a old West city and you can't reveal what you really are. Well, maybe you play a system like Deadlands for a couple sessions and you just put your characters in Deadlands. Because we did completely different characters. I don't think you have to do that to mix other games in either. Mm-hmm. If you just want that variety of feel without doing something like the Mists of Ravenloft. I think you can do that. You mix in some other systems because different systems do different things better than each other.
I don't know if I could roll a character in a different system than the one he already was in. Well, that would be jarring. We're saying, to me.
I think what helped too is that when we played Inspectors, set in the city we were playing in, two things were really going for us. One, we made new characters, and making a character in Inspectors takes like all of 10 minutes.
Hippies.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's really the first
thing. Making
time.
A character should be like tax return.
We can probably make a character in like
you
a
never know
now.
If you're doing it right. You wonder if you've screwed yourself. You just think you should hire a professional to do it the whole time.
I just assume I've screwed myself. It doesn't matter how long I take.
The characters were very easy to make, so we were able to get that out real quick and just get into the gaming. But what really helped, too, is that since Inspectors is a game where the players define 99% of what goes on, it really helped that this was this shared, collaboratively built world that we've made. I think that if you run a traditional game, GM, plot lines, all that sort of stuff, then it's difficult to kind of switch gears. You know, if you have a different person running in the same world, maybe they don't quite understand the world as good as you do, but they're taking on this different aspect of it. I'm not saying it's impossible or you shouldn't do it. You just might grind the gears a little bit.
The further you get away from the main storyline and the main setting you're in, the easier it is for someone else to pick up and run. If it's a big city you're in or a big country and you're wanting to explore another part of it, start with something that's not anywhere near your storyline.
Right.
And I think one of the opportunities that arises from this, sort of, we've already kind of touched on this, but it does allow for other parts of the setting to be established and explored that you might not otherwise get to in your main game. And then from that, you can go back to the main game, and then all of a sudden, this new thing that has sort of been explored can come into the game somewhat. It can sort of affect what's going on, or it's at least there.
Yeah, you know, characters so and organizations that are introduced in one which is game can appear in another. Like in our case, like I said, it was a matter of scale. The regular players in the Dresden game are in the know. They're playing with the big boys.
Right.
Our Inspectors game are the little guys that don't really know.
Yeah, they're right on the edge of maybe kind of knowing a little bit, but they really don't know anything.
So when the guys do something, that can trickle down into what the little guys are running into.
But what's really awesome on a meta level, though, because you have this dichotomy of big guys in the know and big things happening versus the little guys and just on the edge. The little guys explored areas that weren't defined when we made the city and when we define areas and locations and stuff. So suddenly we played Inspectors, and in one session we had a area of St. Louis called Dogtown, which there is something going on there really bad. that we have no idea what's going on because our characters kind of blew it up and ran for it because they're kind of like that. And then we also did an inner city high school that was haunted and had like the skull and bones sort of weird haunting ghost thing going on.
But our mission was just get a kid back on the honor roll.
Yeah.
So we deal with all the spooky, weird stuff. And then our hacker just hacks the school system and gives him A's again.
Yeah. Yep.
Problem solved without ever actually getting to the root problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool because it does leave kind of some of those plot threads out there. You know, and I originally said I didn't see a reason why you'd want to play different characters in the same system within your setting. But the more I think about it, I think it would be cool to take kind of lower level characters in the same system. And I don't mean level like power level or anything, just characters that are in a different part of your story and kind of explore. Let's take Star Wars, for example. You have a big, massive Star Wars game and you are the rebels fighting back. Now play another game where you are on the Death Star. You know, your Imperial troopers.
Right.
You could do
that. You suddenly die with no
You're sitting there and you're thinking, wow, I'm so glad I've got 3 days up.
Exactly.
It is so good to be an independent contractor.
Hey, you know what? You wanted a quick game. You got one.
Yeah. You know, what's really cool, too, is that you don't even have to play different characters. You could play the same characters and have a really deep, dark, serious game and a really light game. Because if the characters are fleshed out enough to where I am not playing Grim McDarkerson, I am playing like an actual character that has a variety of emotions and motivations and a fully written out backstory, then I have my dark times and I have my happy times. And the main game can be, and this is putting really strict goalposts on it, but this is just for the sake of argument, you do Monday through Friday, which is a normal game where you're taking on the big boys, deep in the big hairy plots, and you're doing all of your grim, dark, darky stuff. And then Saturday and Sunday is when you want to play your light game. And it's like your friends go out and party.
You're talking about in-world, aren't you? Like Saturday and Sunday in-world.
No. I'm just talking normally throughout the course of a period of time, you do the heavy stuff, and that's your normal game. But these guys have days off.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, it's like they're not fighting the forces of evil 24/7. They go out to eat. Sure. They go out to a club. They go and see a movie.
Yeah.
And crazy can happen when they do that.
That is interesting. I've never done that. And I think the reason for that probably is because I think
you
I
play
would be
Grim McDarkerson.
Well, no, it's not that. It's not that. I think, and this goes back to what we talked about in the first part of the episode of a story arc, because what you're talking about is, you're in a story arc, but within that story arc, you have many story arcs, almost like commercial breaks.
Yeah, or side stories, or short stories, or however you want to call them.
Using anime as the example, the beach episode.
I think that would be an interesting challenge, because I think I would find that somewhat jarring.
Yeah.
Because I am concentrating on the story arc that we're on. But then to all of a sudden, okay, with this session, guys, we're going to Weekend at Bernie's kind of a thing. You know,
well, it doesn't have to be
silly.
Yeah.
And that's
we're using dark and silly different. For the sake of argument.
Right.
Here. Well, imagine
it. But you're taking a turn, you know, like maybe a 90-degree turn from what you're doing.
Well, imagine
to do something
it this
else.
Way. Because people always say, oh, you play as BattleTech. So I'm going to use my BattleTech example, not as BattleTech. You're playing a science fiction game, and you're playing a military science fiction game, and you're in a spaceship, and you're fighting the evil aliens from Planet X. And you've been fighting them and doing all this cool stuff. You're gaining allies. You're going on diplomatic missions and you're doing all this stuff. Eventually, you're going to need a little bit of rest. You know, you got to take some R&R. Your crew needs to take R&R. Your ship needs to be repaired. So you go to a space station that has a beautiful paradise planet. And now is the time when it's just like you might be a man or two down, you know, out of game. Somebody else, you know, maybe your GM is like, guys, I need to just take a couple of session rest. You know, I got some stuff going on, or maybe I'm getting a little stressed out, or I just need to recharge the creative batteries. Somebody else wants to run something. Why not just transfer those characters over into a newer, lighter system, like Inspectors or something like that, or even keep the current system you're in and just, you know, not really worry about it too much. And then they go on shore leave. It doesn't have to be this wacky, crazy Weekend at Bernie's thing. It could be. Could be really crazy. Or you go down on shore leave and somebody else is running it and there's an assassination plot.
So at least a question I have.
You know, or something like that.
You specifically said you wouldn't want to make characters again in a different system.
That's correct.
Why is that? I don't think you know why.
I don't know why. I use the system along with my own ideas about their personality and history when I'm rendering them onto the tabletop.
I do that sometimes, too. Like, I look at a character, the system and the numbers are a part of what that character is
in some games.
I do that, too. I agree with you on that. I think a character, a certain part of it, I don't know if it's a large part or whatever, but a good certain part of it is dependent on the system that was made in. So I don't know that I could do that either. I like in what we did, I don't believe that I would want to take my main character and redo it in the Invectors type of a game, because I lose a lot of what, to me, made that character the character.
See, on the other hand, I think I would enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
Because I like taking characters and re-envisioning them within different situations. Well, a system is kind of like a situation to me when I look at it. I would love to take one of my characters that I played in one system, kind of look at it and figure out how would I make that fit in another system, and maybe flesh out a little bit more about that character based on how I would have built it in that system.
Well, here's...
It tells me what the core of that character really is to me by what translates from one system to the other.
Well, here's what my plan is. We have just ended the story arc of Dresden. We are going to be playing it at a later unspecified date after we play a couple of other games. We're going to play John's Blood Moon Goblins. We're going to do Inspectors set in Dark St. Louis with our Dark St. Louis characters, ESP, Extra Special Paranormal Investigators.
And Beth is going to run one of those.
Yeah, and Beth is going to run one. And we'll
come back
and critique her. The Maiden Voyage, I believe.
Yeah. Yikes. And I am going to make a character.
Has Beth ever run a game before?
She's going to lose her maidenhead, is that what you're saying?
That's right. Well, I meant that I don't think she's ever GM before, but also
no,
that.
She has not.
I am going.
She will be popping the GM cherry, if you will.
I'll wait.
Please, Chad.
I'll
wait.
It's all right. I have a character, my bridge troll, in Dresden. I am going to make a character for Wayne and Beth's Inspectors game, which is going to be an original character. When we roll out through these other games we play back to our Dark St. Louis Dresden game, I am going to take the character I had in Inspectors and make her a character in Dresden. And I'm going to play both her and my bridge troll.
I'm actually very curious how this experiment will work. And that's why I find it interesting.
It's not an experiment. It's just characters. See, to me, a character is a character because the character is in what their personality is and what their background, their history, their how you play them, how you role play them from time to how they're different from other characters and how you role play them.
I see it as
and
an experiment.
The stats and the character sheet is like, eh.
I see it as an experiment because I've never GM'd someone that's playing two characters within the same storyline. Have you ever done this before where you've created a character in one system and then rolled it into another and then rolled it back to the first and...
No, because...
So it is an experiment.
I know how the experiment's going to end. It's going to be successful. So it's not really an experiment.
Well, someone is confident in himself.
It's just a character.
Well, and I agree. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that Chad will be able to do this and do it well. I don't know that everyone can. I think I would have a hard time creating a character in one setting, changing it to another to another rule set, and then taking it back to the original rule set. It's just, it's very disjarring to me.
I would probably be able to do that. I don't think I would ever be the type of player that has two characters that are switching in and out of the exact same story.
Yeah, I don't like doing that.
One character would end up getting all the face time and would get the entire focus. And that's just something I know about myself. I wouldn't be able to do that back and forth unless the whole group was doing it and we had two different groups. This group's on mission A, this group's on mission B. I could do something like that, but I couldn't do in and out of the same story with the same groups. I would be confused about, so which character did I have this conversation with Pat's character on? Mm. Was this character there that week, so do they know this piece of information? Or was that character there this week? And that'd be something I would be in my head. I would have a hard time keeping track of it all, I guess.
I'm going to make the characters different enough. I mean, one's going to be a trollish bridge troll, nihilist, sort of happy-go-lucky guy, and the other one's going to be a blind psychometer.
I didn't really know about the blind part.
Yeah, she's going to be a blind psychometer, and she's also going to be a martial artist.
Another aspect of this experiment, as it were, that we did, that I want us to talk about a little bit...
Butt sex?
Is, other than the butt sex, is the fact that...
Wayne's awkward confessions.
Is the fact that Wayne was the GM for the Dresden Files game, and in the Inspectors game... set in the Dresden Files universe, it was Chad.
No, and what you guys were the game master.
Yes, but you ran the
John,
game.
John, you are the demon.
And if you're not doing this with inspectors, if you're doing it with another system where you do have more of a traditional GM, what I want to talk about and get a little bit of information is how do you handle an alternate GM in your original world setting where that alternate GM is not going to know what is going on, you know, say behind the curtains? Because, you know, Wayne has his story lined out that he's got going.
Right. He's got and his mysteries.
He knows the mysteries that he's telling, but Chad, you don't.
Or at least you think I know the mysteries.
Well, yeah.
Well, certainly.
But so, that's the curtain.
Yeah. That we see the curtain and we assume that there's all the mysteries and you know it. And as an alternate GM, so to speak, within this same world, I don't want to know the mysteries. I don't want Wayne to come to me and say, okay, well, you know, this is this player and this is this guy and this is what's really going on. I don't want to hear any of that. Because I'm a player in his game, I want to be surprised along with everybody else. So what I do, or what I did, is I just didn't step on Wayne's stuff. St. Louis is a big city. As much as the population is low and people look on a map and say, oh, that's tiny, or look at our skyline and say, well, there's no big skyscrapers, it's very big and it's very spread out, and there's a lot of room to play in.
Well, and let's face it, in our regular game, there's probably four areas that get visited. Mm-hmm. You guys hit the same bar. You're under the same bridge. Beth's character's house is the main location.
And it's so far from everything else, too. I hate that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, basically, like you're saying, you stay away from certainly the main characters that are being played there, and maybe from the big bad that maybe Wayne has lined out. But I think that there are other things that can be an issue, like certain aspects about the world itself that you might hit up against. Because you can't help otherwise. Like, okay, let's say you want to explore this one part of the supernatural in your game, and you start going down a path and start defining something that has nothing to do with our characters in Dresden. But the problem would be that Wayne is like, oh, nah, I, you know, what you're describing is not how it should be in my game because I have this set up, or, you know, this is the way the rule system goes for Dresden, or I've got this defined. They just haven't experienced it yet. So I, you know, and inadvertently, it's like you're not trying to do it, but I think you will inadvertently sort of bump up against things.
And I can see that being a big issue if you have a very control heavy GM, someone that's is more of the typical GM is running the game, has the full storyline, doesn't want to do a lot of adapting to that other than what happens at the table. I'd take that as an opportunity. People are getting a kick out of this, and I'd start rewriting.
And they're doing my work.
Yeah,
that's right.
So,
but I know a lot of GMs wouldn't do that. Success. They wouldn't see that as the huge opportunity and start doing the rewrite. They'd be like, this huge part of my upcoming story is now completely in the air. What am I going to do?
Let's be honest, most people GM because they're control freaks.
Well, and it also could be, though, that you're working with an established setting. It could be that you're working with an established setting where things are just defined this way. And, you know, like Wayne knows this because he's familiar with the setting. Chad doesn't because this is the first time he's ever played whatever. And so in that case, it's not that the GM, the original GM, is being controlling. It's just that there might be some lack of knowledge, some ignorance, if you will, of the setting itself.
Sure.
So, and I think I would say in those cases that there might be some collaboration between the two GMs that are running just to sort of flesh some things out or whatever. But I agree with you, Wayne. I think most times, certainly in a homebrew setting, rolling with the punches is a great way to do
it. And I think that the main GM is fully within his rights to go to the alternate GM, especially if he has like a lot of notes and he's got everything laid out and he's got this grandmaster plan. I think he's totally within his rights to go to the alternate and say, okay, I'm not going to tell you what's going on, give up the secrets and stuff because you don't want to hear them. Do me a favor. Don't touch A, B, and C. Touch anything you want. Don't touch A, B, and C.
I'm not saying it was aliens, but it's aliens.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. So you can sort of give some hints as to what to stay away from without saying strong-arming, say,
those eastern lands that we're never going to go to and anybody who goes to them never comes back, don't go there.
I'm not saying it's a necromancer vampire in a cave.
And that works in the same
way. It's a necromancer vampire in a cave.
That's right.
If you go to the eastern lands in Dark St. Louis, you will not come back.
Yeah. You can
go to Sajay.
And that's the thing.
Pops or Casino Queen.
It's not necessarily that you'll not coming back is a bad thing. It may be that you didn't want to go back once you get there.
Maybe.
There is a Whitecourt vampire over there.
That's true.
There is.
All kinds of intrigue.
There's a Whitecourt vampire wherever I go.
You know, I thought about this a little bit too, Chad. We've talked about the revolving GM games before.
Right.
I think there's an opportunity here for a revolving GM type thing, too. Mm-hmm. If you have players in the group that have never GM'd and you want to give them the chance to GM and you want them to
want them to force them to GM so they appreciate
it. Or you want to force them so they appreciate it. But they're not comfortable with, you know, running a whole campaign, or, you know, maybe they're not comfortable with the system you're playing. You could mix some things in like this and say, okay, you're more comfortable with a simple game like Inspectors where you're not doing nearly as much as the work. Run Inspectors this
Running week. Inspectors is a lot of work.
Not for you.
You got to show up. You got to say, roll for that. And then you have to say things like, what do you think happened?
Well, and the funny thing is...
pain.
Well, the funny thing is, this was really a shell shock for some of the people around the table. There are other games out there where there is no GM at all.
Right.
Where everyone like around the table is a player.
Right.
Those are would That's be just even more of a shell shock.
You should play Fiasco or something.
It sounds like it's appropriately named. A game without a GM is a fiasco. You need a firm, strong, guiding hand to show you exactly where the narrative is going at all times and lead you to the preordained conclusion.
Yes.
Because that is tabletop gaming. I mean, how else would you write the end of the module? You didn't know how it was
going
to end.
That's true. If they're not going into the deep, dark castle, why did you make all those maps, traps, and monsters for it?
So you could put them in the deep, dark, forgotten cave or the deep, dark, abandoned mine in case they went to one of those.
Why is there a dining hall in the deep, dark, abandoned mine? Shut up.
Because it used to be a dwarf hold.
Because what else are you going to attach the throne room to?
It's like you've read my manuscript for Blood Moon Goblins. Did Keith send you the map, bastard?
I still say you should do a Blood Moon Goblin side module where Earthshaker's foot stomps by accident into the warren. The goblins are sent into the foot and into Earthshaker, and then it steps out of the hole it made.
My efforts to translate Earthshaker into my own pitiful original creations would be like an observer of a beautiful but foreign language mangling it. I can only understand Earthshaker. I'm like Han Solo standing before Jabba the Hutt. Could I butcher his beautiful language with my own rendition? Yes, I could.
Wait a minute.
Why would I?
You call Huttese or whatever it's called? You think that's a beautiful language?
That is the in-universe justification of why the humans do not speak it. They speak basic to the Hutts because they all say, well, you know, I speak Huttese, but I lack the necessary
qualitas. Well, you learn something every day. I did not know that. Tease.
She saw Wonky Chewbacca Roper.
The ho-ho-ho is very important.
It is.
It's an integral part of the grammar.
Bog on Wonchy Cook's paw.
As we said, we're wrapped up one setting.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of games. We're going to take a little bit of a break where we're going to continue with our sort of our experiment that we've done here and then play some Blood Moon Goblins. And then we're going to come back to Dresden and this Wayne is going to open chapter two.
Say, this is the wonderful thing about the group as it exists right now. We have so many people willing to GM that everyone gets to GM, everyone gets to play.
Except Pat.
Well, he could if he wanted to.
Yeah,
that's true. I might even run an Inspector's game.
Oh my god!
What? Oh my god, goosebumps!
Everyone gets to do what they want. Because I know I don't want to GM all the
Spider-Man.mp4. That's correct. I don't want to GM all the time either.
Yeah, I don't want to GM all the time. But I like GMing too. So that's why I love the group as it is right now, with so many people ready to jump in or jump back to be a player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be an NPC in the Inspector's games. I'm going to be driving to and from Florida for this two-parter.
For real. For not
for real, yeah. For real, I'm going to be driving to and from Florida. In-game, I'm going to be the home office. Beth and I haven't decided what they have to call me asking for, but all I know is they have to call me, and I have to not want to give it to them at first. We'll see where we get from there.
Awesome. I cannot wait.
So I'm looking forward to our next month or so of play. It's going to be varied and awesome.
Yeah. I can't wait to find out about my psychometer. And that's the cool thing is that I am starting her in a light game and then going into a heavier game. And I can come up with characters and story off the bat, but I need to play the character a bit to get personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to kind of ease her into this to a personality and then get into the more serious game. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I think that's going to do it for us this time. We'll see how this goes and we'll have to report back later on it, on our grand experiment, as it were.
Or we'll forget about it and talk about Battletech and 80s D&D.
That could happen as well.
It's for the boot. So. We don't give a f***. We don't give a poop, Chad.
This I'm is, sorry. I'm oh sorry. My iTunes, yes.
We do not give a poop.
Fair enough. All right. We'll see you next time, guys.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.